But this morning, I have a lesson that I think is applicable to all of us who are fathers or grandfathers. You know, the term of interment that we often as fathers hear, either the word dad or daddy, just kind of always is special to us who are fathers or who have been fathers and are now grandfathers. And yet, even though it is a privilege to hear those words, with that privilege, man, there's a responsibility. There's a great responsibility that comes. My wife and I have some shirts that were given to us by our daughter back at Christmas. And on the back of each shirt, it says, for mine, it says, living the papa life. And on the back of hers, it says, living the nana life, which is what we are now, or what our grandkids call us. And I have to tell those of you who are fathers, and one day we'll look forward to that, that's a fun time. And I hope you get to enjoy it as we are enjoying our time with our grandkids. But the privilege that comes with being a father also has a great responsibility. And what I mean by that is, if you go back, and I had the reading this morning from Deuteronomy 6, but I want to take you to another passage of Scripture. It's found in the 18th chapter of the book of Genesis. There in the 18th chapter, Abram is encamped by what are called the Oaks of Mamre, a few miles north of a place called Hebron. And he sees three men coming toward him. He goes out to them and he beseeches them to come and to stay with him. And these three men who visit him and his wife Sarah, we learn later that two of them are angels and one is the Lord himself. Abraham demonstrates, as was the custom in that day, tremendous hospitality. He goes and has them come in. He has water brought, has their feet washed. He selects a calf, has one of his servants slaughter it and began preparing to cook it. He has bread made. He has curds and milk brought to them so that they can enjoy a good meal. And during this visit, what God does is to announce to Abraham and to Sarah that a year from that time, his wife, who will then be 90 years old, will have a son. Think about that, folks. His wife, who will be 90 years old, will have a son. You know what Sarah does? She laughs. And you can understand why. What? Are you kidding me? A son at 90? And the Lord challenged her. And yet, he asked her, is anything too difficult for the Lord? And she denies ever having laughed. And he comes back in verse 15 of Genesis 18 and says, no, but you did laugh. And as the three of them arise to leave after spending their time with Abraham and Sarah, the Lord says, and I think he's speaking to the two angels with him, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, since Abraham will become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And then he says something else in verse 19, and this is the verse that I want you to consider this morning, men. Because what he says is this, for I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham all that he has spoken to him. In this one verse, there are several things I want you to notice. Number one is this. It is the fact that God said, I chose Abraham. He chose Abraham for a purpose. And the purpose for which he chose him was involved that Abraham would command his children and those of his household to keep the way of the Lord. And the way in which they were to keep that way of the Lord was, as he says, by doing righteousness and justice. In other words, by teaching your children to do what is right and just. And then the result of this, as you notice the end of that verse, is this, that God would be able to bless Abraham because Abraham was doing what God wanted him to do. And God would be able to keep his promises toward Abraham. Men, I believe that the same is true for those of us here this morning who are fathers and for those of us who one day will be fathers. Now what I mean by that is God doesn't choose us in the way that He chose Abraham, and He chose Abraham to be a great nation, but yet at the same time we choose to become fathers. It's a choice we make. We choose to become fathers. And our responsibility, which God expects us to fulfill as fathers, is to command our children to keep the way of the Lord. And we do that by teaching them the things that are right in the sight of God. You know, one of the things I wish for each of you who are here this morning, who is a father or who one day will be a father, is that as you draw near to the end of your life, that you can look back over those years spent as a father and you can say to yourself in your heart of hearts, it's been good. It's been fulfilling. I'm proud of my kids. And it's been a joy to share life with them. But here's the real question, men. Here's where the rubber meets the road, as we sometimes say. What does it take on your part to have a fulfilling fatherhood? Now, I realize that our children are going to make their choices. I realize that children won't always do what you want them to do. You go to the prodigal son and you see there that one of the sons decided, I want to live my life the way I want to live it. Dad, just give me my money and let me go. And he runs off for a while and lives his life in a very unfulfilling way. But yet at the same time, that son did come home. That doesn't always happen, and I understand that too. But there are some things that we can do to, as we would say, stack the cards in our favor. And I want to share some of those things with you this morning. First of all, if we want to have a fulfilling fatherhood, one of the things that has to be in place in our lives is love. And that love has to be directed in three different ways. Number one, men, we have to love God. What was read for us just a moment ago by Hunter? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. We have to love Him first and foremost. And that has to be evident in our families. Our children need to see that we love God. And that He is first in our lives. But secondly, you have to love your wives. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22 and following, specifically down in verse 25 and then 28 and 29, in verse 25, here's what Paul says to those of us who are husbands. He said, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself up for her. And then in verse 28, he says, or begins that with, husbands ought to, what? Verse 29, to love their wives as their own bodies, for he who loves his own wife loves himself. I had the privilege this morning, we were sitting eating breakfast, and there on Fox News was an interview with Benjamin Watson, famous football player, professional football player, has five children, and he has just released a new book. And one of the things he's writing is about, or has written about, is for fathers. How fathers can be the men they need to be. And one of the things he said in that was, you have to love their mother. He said, when I was a boy growing up, I used to backtalk my mother. I used to be rude to my mother. And he said, one day my father called me from work and said, son, you need to change, because when I come home, it's not going to be good. And he said, you have mistreated my wife. He said, at that point, I understood what it meant. My mother was my daddy's wife, and I needed to respect my mom because my daddy loved her. Men, the way you treat your wife speaks volumes to your children about what she means to you and how those young men themselves will one day treat their own wives. But the third thing is we have to love our children. And we take our cue from God. God is love, John would say. And we know passages we hear over and over again. God so loved the world that he did what? He gave his only begotten Son. He loves us enough to give on our behalf. Or Romans chapter 5, verse 8, in this is love. Or God demonstrates his own love toward us, not that he sent his Son to die for us. It is the idea that while we were still sinners, he died for us. There are times our children don't do what we want them to do, but it doesn't mean we stop loving them. We may not like them for the moment. We may not like some of their behaviors, but we love them because they're ours. We brought them into this world, and we want to see them become the best they can. Do our children know that we love them? Even in those times when we have to say no, because in our understanding of the situation at the moment, we believe that it is best to say that for them and for their well-being. Do they know that we are doing what we do because we truly love them? Do our children know that we love them and that because of that, our goal for them is their eternal salvation? Do your children know, men, that more than anything else, what you want for them is that they make it to heaven? Do they know that? Have you communicated that to them? Because that's what real love is all about. I want you to be in heaven. I want you to be there eternally. And what do our priorities reveal about that? And what do they reveal based upon the way we demonstrate love? You see, love is important in raising our kids. But along with love, we have to have courage. You know, to be a man of God, fathering children with which he has blessed you requires courage. And probably, you, if you haven't already encountered it, are going to find those times in your life, more so than you care to count, when Satan will seek to wear you down when it comes to the courage that you need to have with your children. And what I mean by that is courage to walk the right path, courage to stand in the gap, courage to do the right thing. Even when it's not popular, even when those around you are saying, go a different direction, they need to see a man who says, no, this is what we will do. If you go back to the beginning of the book of Joshua, Moses is not allowed to go into the promised land because God, because of his disobedience at Meribah, and so God has appointed a new leader. It is a young man, well, he's not young anymore, but his name is Joshua. Joshua is going to lead the children of Israel into the promised land. Moses has died, so God is speaking to Joshua. And three times there in the first chapter of the book of Joshua, what God says to him is this: be strong and courageous. Verse 6, verse 7, and verse 9. And the last time that he says it, he adds some other things to it. He says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Joshua needed that because he was going to be leading God's people. Well, when you come to the end of the book of Joshua, and it's the end of Joshua's life, he's led the people, they've conquered the promised land. He knows his time to leave this world has come. He's an old man. He entered the land at about 80 years of age. He's much older than that now. And here's what he says to the people there in Joshua 24 as he's gathered them together, verse 14. He says, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, Choose for yourselves today whom you will serve. Whether the gods which your father served beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But here's the key. This is what he says. This is what should stick with us, men. But as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Men, that's what our children need to hear from us. I don't care what everybody else is doing. I don't care what someone else thinks. As for me and my house, we're going to serve God. We're going to do His will. I believe that if you will be courageous in your convictions and stand firm in leading your family to serve the Lord, I believe that God will, like Joshua, He will be with you wherever you go as you seek to lead your family. I believe that. So there's love, there's courage, but there's also got to be faith. You know, we hear Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, quoted time and again. And in that one verse, what the writer is doing is defining for us the role of faith in our lives when it comes to our relationship with God. Because there he says that without faith, it is impossible to please Him. That is to please God. For he that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him or who seek Him. While our children will not make it to heaven based upon or on the coattails of our faith, what they can do is learn what their faith is to be like based upon what they see in us. But the question is for each of us here this morning is, what do your children see in your faith? Is your faith substantial in your life? Is it the guiding light, so to speak, that guides you in the direction you go in all of your decisions and in the way that you live? Long ago, Solomon, in Proverbs chapter 3, there in verse 5, said, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not upon your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths." Let me ask you a couple of questions. Do your children see you as someone who trusts in the Lord with all of your heart and not someone who thinks He has all the answers? Do your children see you as someone who acknowledges God in everything He does and gives God the credit for the success that he has experienced in his life? You know, Paul once said there, "But by the grace of God, go I." Do we men stop and say, "You know, I've been successful in my life, but it's because God has watched over me and blessed me. You know, we've been able to accomplish many things, but it's because of what God has done." Kids, I want you to know it's because what God has done in our lives. Do your children see you as someone who prays for each of them by name, asking God to guide and bless and protect them in their lives? Do they hear those words on your lips? Is it evident that your faith is a vital part of your life? And if you're a young dad, now's the time to start. When they're little, let them start hearing that now. Let them see it in your life. Let it be something that just sinks in and they absorb like a sponge, so that as they grow older, they realize, "I don't do nothing without first seeking God, asking Him to guide me, give me wisdom, help me serve you faithfully." But then there's that last thing, commitment. Being a godly father isn't an easy thing to do, but it's the right thing to do. And as fathers who seek to honor God in rearing our children, Men, there are going to be times, there are going to be a lot more times than you care to count in which we sacrifice our own interest and our own desires for their good. Let me say that again. Men, if you're going to raise your children in a way that honors God, there are going to be a lot of times that you sacrifice your interest and your desires for what's best for them. We live in a world of me. We live in a world where I see too many young fathers thinking about what they want. It's my money, I make it, it's my time, it's my whatever. Me, my, and mine are the words that too many young men seem to thrive upon today. And it's not about what's best for them, what's best for my wife, what's best for my kids, what's best for my family. And that's where we need to start looking if we're going to save families and if we're going to raise godly children. You see, there are times our own wants and needs take a back seat to what our family needs. And I know Paul was talking about the church, but he was talking about individuals, and that's what we are within the church in Philippians chapter 2. And there in verse 4, where he says, do not merely look out for your own interest, but also for the interest of others. We look out for the interest, what's best for our families. So there are going to be times that we sacrifice our wants and our needs for what's best for them. There are going to be times we sacrifice our time for what's best for our kids. What Hunter read just a moment ago from Deuteronomy chapter 6, if you look there in verse 7, he says, you shall teach them, talking about the commandments of God. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Folks, that takes time. It takes time to instill within young people a love for God, a desire to honor God. To teach those values takes time. We can't just do it 10 minutes a week. It takes time. And there are going to be times that we sacrifice our money. You know, if anyone... And I know that if you look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, really what Paul is talking about there addressing are those widows who are widows indeed. And then he talks about widows who have family to help take care of them and should be fulfilling that responsibility. And so what he says in verse 8 when he says, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. The King James uses the word infidel. If we do not use the finances that God has given us to care for our families, we have missed what God has called us to do in this world. If our money is all about buying a bigger truck, a bigger boat, another four-wheeler, a nicer shotgun, or fishing rod, or whatever else it may be, when our kids need braces, or something else needs to be done in the family, and our kids need to be cared for, we have missed what our responsibility is as fathers. And sometimes we put our dreams on hold. Because we're taking care of raising our kids. There are some of you that made huge sacrifices so that your children could go to college. You've made sacrifices so that your children could receive certain things they needed in life. And your dreams were put on hold. And maybe some of those dreams will never come to pass. But you know what? The most important dream you could ever have will most likely come to pass. And that is that your children will love God and love you and live godly lives. Men, the commitment to become a father does not have term limits. We can't decide that we are going to be fathers for them and be there for our children up until they turn 18 and then say, no, you're on your own. You're a man now. You're a woman. You got to go out and make your way in life. No, fatherhood is for life. Fatherhood is for life. And some of the older ones in this audience know I'm telling the truth, because your kids will still call you when they're 30, 40, 50, 60 years of age. What do you think about this? Should I do that? Can you help me with this? And you'll put down what you're doing and you'll go help them, because that's what fathers do. That's what fathers do. The supreme goal, and I know I'm running out of time, but the supreme goal, folks, of fatherhood is twofold. It's what we find in two passages. One is Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. What does it mean to train up a child? Or to train someone? David, in his day, had a number of men in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 8, that came over from the Gadites while he was fleeing Saul. And a statement that is made in 1 Chronicles 12, 8 about these men is that they were mighty men of valor, men trained for war, who could handle shield and spear. They had been trained in battle. They knew how to fight. They knew how to handle the armament of war. A little bit later in that book, in 1 Chronicles chapter 25, David is king. And there's a statement there in verse 7 about 288 men who served in the temple. And it's said of these 288 men that they were trained in singing to the Lord. So to train someone is to develop within them skills that they need for whatever they're going to be doing. What are we doing with our children? We are training them. Our goal is to train them to be able to discern between good and evil. They have their senses, as the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 14. Senses trained so that they can discern between good and evil. We want them to be able to choose the good and reject the evil, but they've got to have their senses trained to tell, is this good or is this not good? Our goal is to help train them in that way. Our goal is to help them be like us in their faith, provided our faith is what it needs to be. One of the things that Jesus said in Luke chapter 6, verse 40 is that a pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone after he's been fully trained will be like his teacher. If we are training our children, they will be like us. Now the question is, do you want your children to be like you? Are you committed to God? Do you love Him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength? If not, what will they become like if they become just like you? And then there's that second one. Bring them up. You've heard it over and over again. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger or to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Men, our responsibility is to bring them up, not to create eternal children, eternal boys. You know, Peter Pan was a good movie, but that's not the goal of fatherhood, to create eternal boys. It is to create men. Men who will make the necessary sacrifices to care for a family. Men who will be the ones who set the direction that the ship is going, who guide the family in the way it should go. We are to prepare boys to become men who will serve as great fathers for their children, so that their children will want to do the same. And when our daughters are concerned, or where our daughters are concerned, I should say, what we need to show them is what real men who dearly love them, how those men will treat them by demonstrating that love for their mothers. Because our daughters will do one of two things. Our daughters will grow up and they will either look for a man whom they think acts like we do, or they will grow up and look for a man who acts totally opposite of what we do, based upon how we treat their mother. And men, one of the greatest compliments that your daughter can ever pay you is when she brings that young man to you that she's in love with, and she whispers in your ear after she introduces him to you, and she says, "Daddy, he reminds me of you." Take it as a compliment. He reminds me of you. Men, what I'm asking of you today is to choose the job. I'm not going to tell you it's easy. I'm not going to tell you that you're going to spend some sleepless nights or some nights in which you don't rest because you worry over and over about choices your children are making and things they're doing. Job worried about his kids. He offered sacrifices all the time on behalf of them because he was worried they might have sinned against the Lord. But choose to be God's representative with your children. Let them see in you a person who honors him. Be a father that they are proud to say to their friends, "That's my dad. That's my dad." This morning, if you're a man here today and you're not a Christian, you know the best way to start really showing your children what's important in life is to give your life in obedient faith to Jesus Christ, to confess his name before this body of Christians, to say, "I want to be buried with him in baptism. I want to turn from the way that I've lived my life, and I want to live it for God for the rest of my days." Today, if you're a father here and you are a Christian, you've already started down the right path. Just keep doing what God wants you to do in honoring him in the way that we've spoken about this morning. But if for any reason this morning you need to come repenting of sin, turning away from that which led you away from God, and being buried with them in baptism, won't you do so as together we stand and sing?